Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, and I have with me the natural nurse on the line. Are you there?
Hi, Dr. Z. This is great for us both to be here together. Many of our listeners will usually hear either myself, the natural nurse, or you, Dr. Eugene Samprone, as being the host, along with very knowledgeable and specific guests who know a lot about natural medicine. But today, we're so happy to be doing the show together.
Yeah, it's wonderful to provide this great service to people and talk about issues in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today, which I guess quickly is not becoming alternative. It's actually working complementary or by itself with mainstream medicine, and we're really excited to delve into our topic today. But do we have any announcements for the listeners out there or anything?
Absolutely, Dr. Z. You know, if you go, listeners, to naturalnurse.com and click on schedules, you will see many on-the-ground presentations that myself and Dr. Eugene Samprone are involved with. For instance, actually today I will be giving an edible and medicinal weed walk right here in the Long Island area, and that's going to be at a fabulous CSA farm, which is called Restoration Farm. It's part of Bethpage Restoration Village, and it's just a gorgeous, huge farm where everything is grown organically. And besides the vegetables and medicinal herbs they are growing, we'll also be looking at the wild plants, and that's today. And then on Thursday, we have the same kind of walk, which is being sponsored by the Nassau County Land Alliance. And then we have various ones going on. Of course, we have Chinatown trips. We have another one coming up in the fall. Dr. Z, we have a lot of registration for that one.
Oh, great.
So if people want to come on board, they really should check naturalnurse.com, look at the flyer, see what they have to do to get on board. So we have lots of exciting events all the time, and you are welcome to join us, as well as our yearly excursion, Echo Tours for Cures, to Jamaica. That was really a great one this year, Dr. Z.
Enjoyed it immensely, where if people are interested in learning about rainforest plants and other cultures and interested in taking what we call an education vacation, that certainly might be a trip that's interested to you for doctors, nurses, photographers, people that some of the photography, I can't wait till the webmaster posts some of the photography. I know he's working on it. Oh, it's stunning. So really excited to take people there and have a wonderful trip.
Do you know the dates for next year in terms of the Bridgeport trip?
I don't think we've posted it yet, but we'll do so.
It'll definitely be in March. It's in March. We're going to have one from Stony Brook University, one from the University of Bridgeport. And we also have a really excellent lecture coming up October 4th, Dr. Z. I know you will be presenting at a major national conference on the West Coast, but here on the East Coast in Montauk, really. It's actually the area of Southampton. At Southampton, which is a campus, part of Stony Brook University, they have a Southampton campus, we will be having our second annual natural therapy conference, which grants 5 CEU credits. I've already gotten approval for the credits. It's from one day, 10 to 4. It's very reasonable. It's right in Southampton. And it's an unusual opportunity because very often when these holistic medical conferences are being given around the country, you have to spend so much money to go to them. And any profit we make from this conference, which is called the Second Annual Evidence-Based Natural Therapy Conference, all the profit goes for not-for-profit clinics, which are free clinics open to the public, one of which, of course, is at the University of Bridgeport, and one is run by Stony Brook University.
Well, what a great clinic that is. It serves the underserved because, you know, unfortunately, although one would think going natural towards a natural approach towards medicine would be very inexpensive, it can be expensive, particularly if people need to use supplements or follow a particular diet. And it just goes to show you that the powers that be should be focusing on making healthy food, particularly organic vegetables and organic foods, more affordable than commercial foods that are filled with pesticides and herbicides and toxins and things like that. We have a completely inverted situation here where it's a lot easier to go get a Happy Meal for a buck or whatever it is at some of these big fast food chains than to make a big organic salad. And so there are ways that we're working with that, with getting involved with co-ops and supporting our local farmers and things like that. But, you know, we're thinking of people that live in urban areas and things like that. So there has to be a big societal change in order for that. But that's what I think, and that's why it's great to see some of these clinics where, you know, some of the supplements may be expensive, and sometimes when people are in the midst of a degenerative disease, they do need to supplement with a particular nutraceutical, or if you don't like that word, nutritional supplement or things like that. And so, although we like to use homeopathy quite a bit, and in, you know, in the very poor areas of India and around the world, homeopathy reigns supreme as the most cost-effective medicine, because from a single mother tincture of a particular remedy, you could treat thousands and thousands of people with that homeopathic remedy. The skill is really, the expense is not really in the medication. The expense is training the practitioner to prescribe the homeopathic remedy perfectly. So that's kind of interesting. But yeah, we're looking forward to that thing. I won't be there, but I'm sure there'll be a host of stellar presenters at that.
Yes,
conference.
Actually, Dr. DiAdamo is presenting, and he's giving an incredibly interesting lecture on epigenetics. And really, the bottom line, which we can talk about in the paper that we published as well in the Natural Support for Autoimmune and Inflammatory Disease, is the fact that even if people have a genetic propensity to develop some kind of disease, that doesn't mean it's going to manifest. It means that you can either pull the trigger or shut the trigger off through your lifestyle. So it really is a very complex situation, not a simple situation where if you have this gene, you're going to get this illness. So Dr. DiAdamo will be there lecturing on that. Of course, he is the author of the book, Eat Right for Your Type, and you were actually his protege at one point, Dr. Z.
Yeah, he's trained a lot of people since then, but and certainly went on to become one of the rock stars of the natural medicine profession, with best-selling books in many nations. And then he wrote a series of new books now on, again, genomics. And
that's exactly what he'll
get. We got to try to connect with Dr. DiAdamo and get him on the show.
Very good. I will do that, yeah. Because he is the head speaker at the conference, the keynote.
And that then, would be good to promote the conference there. So that's an excellent idea. And I think the listeners would love to hear Dr. DiAdamo and his work. He's quite an eloquent speaker.
And, excellent. We will have him on. And the date of that conference is October 4th. They are taking registration now. It did sell out last year. So if you are any kind of health professional at all, social worker, massage therapist, acupuncturist, licensed naturopathic physician, MD, nurse practitioner, these are some of the health professionals we had come last year to get CEUs, because everybody needs CEUs. And if you are a consumer and don't need CEUs, you can come. Anyway, this is actually open to professionals and the consumer, although, Dr. Z, we don't dummy down the language. We offer it to consumers who would like to come, but the language of the conference is really focused on professionals. So that's a lot of consumers, though, especially listeners to our show and Gary Null's show, really are quite educated in holistic medicine and enjoy something that may be a little challenging in terms of vocabulary, but really focused on the real science and the real evidence that supports the use of natural therapies.
Great. So let's talk, speaking of natural therapies, let's dovetail into our topic today. So
it's a great segue, and of course we have written so many books, and you can find them at naturalnurse.com books or at Dr. Z Naturally books, and we have written excellent books that are actually used as textbooks. In particular, the book I'd like to focus on today, because we have so much of this information in there, is Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide. And in there, every single thing is referenced. And you know what's so satisfying about that book, Dr. Z? We get calls almost daily from people all over the country and the world who get a copy of it one way or another on Amazon.com or someone recommends it to them. And they say, they're crying. They say, oh, my God, in 1 week it changed my life. I've been suffering for 30 years, for 40 years, and now in 1 week I have not taken any pain pills at all. And we talk about a lot of that in terms of autoimmune and inflammatory disease, because, of course, rheumatoid arthritis is one of the many autoimmune diseases, in a paper that was published recently in the Journal of Restorative Medicine.
Yes, and we're going to talk about some interesting parts of that.
That would be great. So we know that autoimmune diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis and systemic lupus involve destruction of healthy cells by the body's own defensive mechanisms. And if the immune system's dysregulation is not corrected, the attack can progress to the heart, lungs, and other vital organs. And the mechanisms are known that cause the deregulation of the immune response. They're not entirely understood, but we know there are some triggers.
Yeah.
And, you know, for instance, things that natural physicians such as yourself, Dr. Zamperone, do test and look into. And it seems that conventional science completely glosses over or ignores, such as heavy metal toxicity and leaky gut syndrome, which is also called various things with the tight junctures. I would say it definitely needs to be looked into. Also, the infectious bacteria and parasites and nutritional imbalances, which can overburden the body's immune system and cause this sudden or ongoing deregulated immune signals and responses. And what we find is that the mechanism by which these factors cause the immune system to attack the body's own tissues can be slowed down. So in the paper that we wrote called Natural Support for Autoimmune and Inflammatory Disease, published in the Journal of Restorative Medicine in 2012, we discussed natural therapies that can help regulate the immune system's aggressive behavior without suppressing the necessary defenses. Unfortunately, a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs that are used, actually, you see the long list of problems with them. Uh-oh, don't go near anybody. You might get a cold and die because the autoimmune system is completely turned off, while the natural remedies are so much more centered.
Absolutely. And, you know, some of the interesting theories of autoimmunity that you touched on point to the fact that probably rheumatoid arthritis and these autoimmune diseases are really clinical diagnoses and not really disease entities, but syndromes which are caused by a myriad of factors creating, I guess, what they call the perfect storm. So things like you mentioned, the gut, the whole gut connection, and the gut is connected in many ways. For instance, there's been literature that talks about allergens and autoimmunity and food toxins and Dr. D'Adamo's favorite word, lectins, and which are protein fragments that are unable to be digested that can trigger this. And even the types of diets, the composition of the diet, the type, and cooked versus raw has been looked at in the literature. Also, habits of people. Do they eat very quickly? Do they chew their food, or do they engulf their food? And what does that do to the gut flora? And speaking of gut flora, the flora has been there's been an explosion of literature on gut flora, and it's become a real buzzword, as you know. Certainly, hiring celebrities like Jamie Lee Curtis and whatnot have gotten it into the public domain, but now everyone is talking about their gut flora. So we're kind of back to like the 70s with the Danone yogurt commercials, when people would, they'd have the centenarians there and they'd all tout the fact that, you know, death begins in the colon, like Eli Metchnikoff. So that's interesting. Then you also have the whole idea that your gut is a thinking entity, that most of the immune system is in your gut. So maybe there's a connection there. And you talked about permeability. And then there's the whole idea that you are what you absorb. So the gut in of itself, we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about the connection between autoimmune disease in the gut. But then there's other things that are very interesting, like the sexual hormones in autoimmune disease. And so we found that, you know, the ancients used many herbs, which we'll touch on today, that balance the adrenal hormones and balance also the male and female sexual hormones, and that that actually led to a balanced approach where, regardless of the direction of the problem in the gut, whether it was hyper, like a hyperimmune system or a hypoimmune system, Dr. Kamai, these herbs tended to communicate with the body and bring balance to the system versus one-directionalism, as I say that the medications do. The drugs are one-directional. And you may be a doctor that decides on a direction, but that might not be what the body wants. And so by shutting
That's excellent information, the way you are interjecting so much more of a complex relationship within the body and wellness and disease versus the pharmaceutical model, which is one drug, one bug, or one drug, one action, like we're going to slam dunk and get that cholesterol down regardless if we make the patient sicker. We just look at that one number, and that's not what you do as a holistic physician and as a naturopathic physician. You actually are understanding what science is bringing forth more and more, which is the cellular intelligence. When we even look at something like the mitochondria, mm-hmm. or we look at nerve transmissions, these things are extremely complex, and they have to do both with the consciousness of the individual as well as the chemical structure of the individual, and certainly things like heavy metals, nutritional deficiencies are involved. And you also brought up the concept of the fact that when we're working with natural products such as herbs, they seem to have something that's called adaptogenic tendencies, which means that their action can change according to the needs of that system, which is something that no pharmaceutical can do.
Yeah. And so, you know, and then we also can go back, of course, you know, being a history buff and teaching history of natural medicine at the University of Bridgeport, in my course, I go way back to the foundational cultures. The Ayurvedic culture, the ancient Chinese culture, the Mayans and Aztecs, the Unami Tib, you know, the Greco-Romans, and then, of course, the Middle Eastern cultures, and, of course, Native Americans and other ones, whatever survived. We can look that they all looked at arthritis and autoimmune disease. And they, of course, they called it different things because they had a different language and different understanding of the world back then. But do you know that those same herbs still survive today, of course, and are the mainstay of treatment in even modern holistic approaches? Things like ashwagandha, which we'll talk about, and boswellia, and the Chinese skullcap are all herbs that we need to talk about and did talk about in our paper, which do bring about big changes in the body when used by people with autoimmune disease.
Well, you know what? Let's go to our first break. We're going to play one of our wonderful natural medicine chests that you and I recorded. And when we come back, we're going to go right into specific immune-modulating herbs, such as the ones that you already talked about and more. So you can stay tuned, and we'll be right back with more right here on Natural Alternatives and the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss jojoba, the miracle plant of the desert.
Jojoba is spelled J-O-J-O-B-A, but is pronounced according to its Spanish origins. The jojoba plant grows in the American Southwest and the Sonoran Desert in Mexico. The jojoba is a large bush-like plant resembling mistletoe. It can reach a height of 15 feet and can live from 100 to 200 years. The Sonoran Indians have used the oil pressed from the jojoba beans for centuries. Father Juniper Serra, founder of 21 missions in California, noted in the early 1700s that the local Indians were using jojoba oil for treating sores, cuts, bruises, burns, and as a diet supplement, to soothe skin from sun and wind burns, as a cooking oil, and even as a beverage.
The importance of jojoba as a cash crop was proclaimed in 1935, but it was not until 1974, when the killing of sperm whales was banned, that the government began to study jojoba oil in depth as a substitute for whale oil. The National Academy of Sciences concluded jojoba oil has a radically different chemical structure than any other known oil. Most oils break down or turn rancid. Jojoba, on the other hand, is hypoallergenic, non-toxic, never turns rancid, and does not break down even under high temperature and pressure.
The University of California at Riverside did a study where they cooked 27 batches of popcorn in the same heated jojoba oil. The last batch was just as perfect as the first. These unusual properties are unique to jojoba oil because, chemically speaking, jojoba oil is not really an oil at all, but is a liquid wax. Its composition is almost identical to sebum, which is the oil secreted by human sebaceous glands to help to protect the skin from the environment.
Jojoba has a myriad of usages. The cosmetic industry takes advantage of its compatibility to human skin by adding it to shampoos, conditioners, moisturizers, and many other cosmetic products. In medicine, jojoba can be used directly on rashes, cuts, and psoriasis. It may also be used as a lubricant for artificial hearts. Jojoba contains a natural appetite suppressant, which can be used in weight loss products. It has no known side effects. In industry, jojoba is known to be a superior engine lubricant and will cause a car to run 20 to 30 degrees cooler when added to the crankcase oil.
So, if you are interested in a miracle plant from the desert, reach for jojoba in your natural medicine chest.
And we're back.
That's
right
great.
Here.
Hey, I'm gonna add some jojoba oil to my car. I forgot about that application of it.
Oh, really? That's kind
of
expensive.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So, okay. Well, let's get started and talk about some of these botanicals that people with arthritis and autoimmune disease should be aware of, Dr. Kamlai. So
we should. And, you know, Dr. Z, I am hoping just for a little political intervention here, because we are on the Gary Null Network, Progressive Radio Network, and I think it's one of the best places to stay tuned to, because a lot of this information you do not get. And, you know, Dr. Z, the FDA is becoming ever more aggressive at stopping the proliferation of the kind of knowledge that we're about to share. And, for instance, on any one of these herbs, they cannot say anything, not on a website, not on the bottle, not on literature, about the proven uses that we're going to talk about. So as of now, we can still talk about it on the radio, but we need to be vigilant to maintain the right to discuss this true information, which is actually, as we speak, being banned.
There should be free speech on the bottles as well as free speech you know, like on the radio. So that's kind
right.
of interesting.
So let's go ahead and talk about some of these fabulous autoimmune regulators.
Well, one of my one of the most interesting one is hops, and this one actually was introduced by our illustrious teacher, Dr. Jeffrey Bland. And anyone who knows Dr. Bland who's heard him speak is just in awe at what a wonderful, not only what a wonderful person he is, but just what a gifted orator and incredible scientist he is. And so one day when I was at a lecture and he talked about some literature, and it turns out that one of my classmates, Dr. Luke Kaiser, did the who's a naturopathic doctor out in Gig Harbor, did some of the work on hops, which we know as humulus lupus. And hops is a rambling vine, and it's been used usually as a nervine and sedative, and it's very important economically, of course, in the production of beer. But recent research into the plant shows it has great potential for management of pain and inflammation. In one clinical trial, it inhibited a lot of the COX-2 enzymes, but had a benefit with the COX-1. And that's the problem with lots of the medications, is they either inhibit one and then, or they inhibit both of them, and then you end up with cardiovascular episodes. That's what happened to Vioxx and other ones. So they found that hops may be a safe alternative to ibuprofen, for instance, for inflammation. And they looked at combining the hops with other powerful anti-inflammatories, like those found in olive leaf, the oleanic acid, and the rosmarinic acid from rosemary and other plants, like lemon balm has quite a bit of the rosmarinic acid, and showed that that was extremely powerful. And they actually looked at how these things work, and they found that deep within the cellular matrix, we have these various pathways and communication molecules, which we call kinases. And kinases are families that keep discovering new families of these kinases. That word will come up time and time again in our discussion here. But the kinases are, I would say, communication molecules, which will allow, or signaling molecules that allow certain pathways to be signaled. It's kind of like the old train guy that would signal that there's a train coming with his little lantern, or a lighthouse signaling to a boat to go this way but not this way. So it kind of is a signaling pathway. And there are some of the pathways that, when signaled, lead to release of inflammatory molecules. And so when we use hops in these ways, we can kind of dampen the signals which lead to the pro-inflammatory and express the anti-inflammatory pathways.
One thing I love about hops, Dr. Z, one day you and I were giving a class at the New York Botanical Gardens, and they were having an herbal information class that we taught, and you actually showed me a beautiful hops vine. And I find it interesting because the part of the hops that sort of has the seeds in it is called a phallus. This is just a botanical aside. And now, does hops grow well? People can just plant it in their garden because it's a beautiful plant. And, of course, yes, this is the same thing that beer is made out of.
Yeah. I have a nice hops vine in the house. Dr. Kam, I got a chance to come up and see my garden. I didn't show you the hops vine, but it's out in the front there. And, I use it. You know, I make extracts out of it and give it to patients as a safe and anti-inflammatory therapeutic. It also has a calming effect on the nerves. So that can be helpful because sometimes pain, which is often accompanied with arthritis, stress plays a huge role in the pain. And so a lot of the plants double as nervines or herbs that kind of bring our mind into a state of well-being, stressless well-being. The stress is still there, but we think about it differently, and that makes a big difference in pain.
It's a wonderful herb. So Should people drink beer? Are they going to get their hops that way? Wouldn't hurt. I mean,
well, now,
we have used beer.
With every yin, there's a yang, right?
Right.
And of course, everything has to be balanced. So, you know, one of the issues with hops is it does have some estrogenic properties. So although the fraction of the hops that Dr. Bland found, the isoalpha acids, reduced isoalpha acids, they don't really have that. They don't express that estrogenic thing. But if you use the whole plant hops, you know, it may have some effects on people, and that's been demonstrated by hops pickers that have had some effects like that. So, you know, like everything, we would want to use it maybe for a finite period of time and then move on to some of the other herbs that we discussed. So why don't you talk about Artemisia, our next one?
You know, I love Artemisia because in the herb walk, which I will be giving today, there's a lot of Artemisia species that are also called wormwood that really just grow wild, like mugwort, for instance. And although many Westerners might recognize this plant, sometimes it's called sweet Annie or sweet wormwood. It was described so long ago in 2737 B.C. by the blazing emperor Shen Nang. And, of course, we visit all the history about Chinese medicine on our Chinese herb walk, which is coming up October 27th this year. And it was a very old book, one of the oldest books that has been known. In traditional Chinese medicine, Artemisia annua has been widely used to treat autoimmune diseases such as lupus. Such a shame when these people just suffer needlessly and no medical practitioner advises them to use these gentle and effective remedies. It was traditionally prescribed for something called summer heat, you know, in the Chinese system. Well, of course, you know, Dr. Z, but for our listeners, I think the Chinese system and the Ayurvedic system is really remarkably brilliant. In fact, they have been used in their original form for 5,000 years. A lot of these remedies have been written down in Chinese medicine, and they looked at how the entire system works together, like we're going back to now, looking at the complexity. So when we talk about summer heat, well, today's a good day for that, isn't it, Dr. Z?
Yeah.
In the 90s, I actually love it. For me, summer heat is great, but not for everybody. Some people cringe. They need to go into air conditioning. But just think about it, listeners. How does summer heat feel to you? Well, it feels like hot. It might feel pulsing. And these are inflammatory conditions. So summer heat would refer to inflammation in a Western sense. And this particular herb is what would be called a cooling herb. So that's what's so brilliant about it. And it was traditionally prescribed for summer heat or inflammatory conditions that do get worse in hot summer days. And also the name wormwood was most likely chosen because it destroys parasites. Now, if you say anything about parasites on a bottle of Artemisia that you're selling as an herbal remedy, you can get closed down by the FDA. In other words, the information that really would help people needs to be hidden for some reason.
Wow.
And they're getting worse, that's the thing. You and I have spoken about this for many years, but there's really a massive witch hunt on as we speak. So people can get involved about that and also stock up on the herbs you use.
Yeah.
Now, with the isolation of a specific novel compound called artemisinin, as well as its derivatives, this herb has gained attention for its ability to treat drug-resistant malarial strains. That's another interesting thing, Dr. Z.
Yeah, one of my students did his thesis, Dr. Kam. I have to give you maybe a copy of that one day, on the mechanism of action of how not only the malaria drugs work to destroy the Plasmodium organism, which is one of the things that causes malaria, but also how Artemisia works very differently, and it's just amazing. And so what I find fascinating is that in rheumatology, this is very interesting, rheumatologists have for years prescribed anti-malaria drugs to treat very nefarious autoimmune disease like lupus, like bad rheumatoid arthritis. So they've used these malaria, anti-malaria drugs. Now, they say that it basically just has an anti-inflammatory effect, and that's how it's working. But I found it very fascinating that the artemisia seems to work very similarly to these medications like Plaquenil. And maybe one of the mechanisms of action is it's getting rid of some of the potential pathogens that may be linked to autoimmune disease. You know, one of the big theories, which we didn't talk about, actually you did bring
it
up a bit.
Mentioned it briefly. Yeah, go ahead with it more.
Is that there may be some microorganismic overload in these autoimmune diseases, and that might be one of the triggers, including an environmental trigger and maybe a genetic trigger. And with all those three triggers, it creates like a perfect storm. I find it fascinating that not only does artemisia balance the immune system, both the cellular and antibody response, but it may actually, I wouldn't use the word may, we know it actually kills like spirochetes in Lyme disease because it's been shown, I've actually seen people go to seronegative with borreliosis due to the spirochete that's linked to the development of Lyme disease. So we know it, and the fact that the Chinese used it for summer heat, we know it has some, which is basically the flu in the summer, we know it has some antiviral, maybe antimicrobial, certainly possibly antiparasitic infection. Isn't that interesting that that might be one of the underlying causes of autoimmune disease?
Absolutely, Dr. Zay, and I'm positive that that is correct because there are things, especially spirochetal organisms, that are excellent at being what we write about in several of our books, which is called stealth pathogens, where they actually have discovered ways, which is not so unusual. Think about a butterfly and a caterpillar, how it changes life form expression. But it can actually lose its cell wall so that the immune system can no longer recognize it, and they burrow physically into tissues and joints and hide and then come out periodically. So I am just positive, although we have not been able to discover some of these stealth pathogens yet, that is part of why artemisia would be so useful.
Well, some of them, and if you read Dr. Mattman's book, she's talked a lot about a couple of them, mycoplasma and, you know, several of them. But, yeah, I think we have to do a lot more work looking at the potential infectious root of autoimmunity. And that's one of the discussions I'll have at the Restorative Medicine Conference. What's the evidence that some of these autoimmune diseases are caused by that? So our next herb would be another one that grows not only in the tropical areas of the Caribbean, South America, Mexico, and Central America, but also some types of species of this growing here in North America. And that is Smilax, is the Latin, otherwise known as Sarsaparilla or Sarsaparilla. And so this is one of those things that, you know, we talk about in our Natural Medicine Chest book that used to be used in root beer and was a patent medicine. I have pictures of it in my discussion of old bottles from the 1800s. Of people drinking. I actually am looking at one right now in my office. It's Hood's Compound Sarsaparilla. The eclectic doctors, who were the MDs, who at the turn of the last century used herbal medicine and wrote prolific volumes on it, used this for the treatment of syphilis. In fact, it was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia as a treatment for secondary syphilis. So the doctors kind of knew it was particularly useful for illnesses caused by the spirochetes. It contains a lot of different steroidal molecules. And whenever you hear, like when I teach pharmacognosy, you too, whenever we hear that the plant has steroidal-like molecules, we know it might mimic steroidal-like function in the body or somehow influence steroidal-like function in the body and act as a natural anti-inflammatory. So that's one of the mechanisms of actions of the Smilax. And then they found out that, of course, it does, when used in combination with different herbs, have evidence, particularly in China, battling a type of spirochete called leptospirosis it's very valuable for the treatment of that. Now, I have, and many herbalists like Matthew Wood and David Winston and people that I hold in great esteem, have used star sarsaparilla and many herbalists, of course, that they've trained for patients with Lyme disease with excellent results. I mean, really clinical remission of the disease. And a protocol that we developed combines the sarsaparilla with the cat's claw and some olive leaf and the artemisia and other botanicals for the comprehensive treatment of Lyme disease. And we find that it's extremely effective for that. So not only would this be good for like a Lyme arthritis, which some people have, and by the way, that often is misdiagnosed as other types of arthritis. I had a patient who we thought had hip arthritis, and he told me in a story, no doctor really asked him this. It's kind of interesting. They just thought he had osteoarthritis and needed a new hip. But he told me that he was a hunter for many years and basically lived in the woods. So that to me was a sign that we may have to go deep into his body and look for the presence of spirochetes, and through using advanced diagnostic techniques, because he kept coming up negative for Lyme disease in the conventional testing, we found spirochetes in his blood, treated him with our protocol, and he's fine. So it's very interesting.
That is interesting. Well, Dr. Z, it's time for us to take one more break. And
okay.
Here we love to give an opportunity for you to find out more about all the excellent shows that are here on Progressive Radio Network. And one of the things that Dr. Z and I love about bringing you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z is that it is archived at the archives of PRN.fm. And you can listen to the show again. You can download it and keep a copy. You can tell your friends if they have an autoimmune disease that perhaps they better check out this show. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
And I think the music means that we're back.
And we're back.
Continue our discussion of natural support for autoimmune and inflammatory disease.
Now, Dr. Z, is sarsaparilla available if people wanted to go out and find it in an herb store? I don't see it around so much. Perhaps they'd have to visit a naturopathic physician. Or...
I think online they can get it too. There's a couple websites that you can get the tincture or in a capsule. But it's one of those things that may fall into obscurity if folks like yourself and myself, and I know Dr. Friedman, one of my colleagues, is very much interested in bringing it back into...
David Winston.
David Winston,
I think,
too. Yeah.
We've had him on our show, and
yeah.
He is really an advanced herbal medicine practitioner who... I love David's work because he really brings together so much of the Native American healing culture that, as
and
well
good,
as the eclectic physician.
Well, you know.
Yes, and so that's one place that people can go to find some of these formulas that are more advanced and not just available in the health food store. And the problem is, Dr. Z, again, is getting this information to people. That's why Progressive Radio Network is so important, and our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, is so important.
Well, we should post this article maybe on the website or our website so that people can get a link to this journal article that we wrote on these herbs for autoimmune disease, because there's so many people suffering from that, and they should be using these plants. Now, maybe their medical doctor doesn't know anything about these plants, but at least this is a scientific article to begin the discussion and maybe educate some of the doctors out there. Certainly a holistically minded chiropractor or other practitioner certainly may be helpful in getting these herbs to the patients that desperately need them. Particularly, there's another one that I'd like to discuss before we run out of time, which is reishi mushroom, the mushroom of immortality. I know when we talked about it in our book, we told the story of that the king sent the sailors out to find the mushroom of immortality, and they found it, never returned back to the king because it was such a powerful thing. So you hear stories like that, and you say, wow, this must be really good. And reishi's actually found on decaying trees in the Northeast and really all over the place. It's not a mushroom that you can't find. If you take a class in foraging, you should be able to find the reishi. Ancient Chinese medical texts list it as an immune regulator with calming, pain-relieving action, and tonifies the blood. It even helps the mind, too, and it seems like it helps with mental restlessness. So, again, it seems to help the mind and body, which I love about these things. Now, the mushrooms have a very interesting effect in that they are what they call amphoterics, which many of the herbs we're discussing today are. That means that it can upregulate or downregulate the immune system as needed. So, for instance, if you have cancer where you really need parts of your immune system to be potentiated so that you can fight the cancer, it will help your body do so. But if you have autoimmune disease and you need an immunosuppressing activity, like reducing some of these kinases and whatnot, it will also do so. And we're not making this up. This is listed in the medical literature. And there's actually been studies that it exerts a beneficial effect in patients with rheumatoid arthritis after using the mushroom for 24 weeks. So that's a good half 6 months of using this on a regular basis, which, you know, I want to just tell patients that some of these herbs do take time to balance the immune system. They're not like you take the pill one day and all of a sudden the next day you're done with your rheumatoid arthritis. It takes constant training of the body so it can focus on health and not disease.
This is so true, and it is well documented. They actually have investigated the specific action, like you're talking about, of reishi mushroom, and it's called immunomodulating.
Mm-hmm.
So studies of a new immunomodulating agent is one of the studies, and immunomodulatory effects of this mushroom, looking specifically at rheumatoid arthritis, and that particular study was in the journal Immunopharmacology and Immunotoxicology 2006. So, yeah, physicians don't know this, but that doesn't mean that it's not studied. It is highly studied, highly efficacious, and when we look at the risk-benefit ratio of these kinds of therapies, they are excellent. Now, what if someone's already on pharmaceutical drugs, Dr. Z? Can they integrate these in, or should they do that, under supervision with a naturopathic physician?
You've got to watch it. You know, I've of course, doing a lot of rheumatology, have patients, I'll be speaking to one this evening. And she is taking several of the immune modulating things, but she's also on a lot of these amphoterics, and she's able to manage both of them. And actually, the MD is slowly taking her off of the conventional ones because she seems to be showing improvement. This particular patient's been on some of these herbs for probably a good part of a year now and showing rheumatoid factor going down, ANA going down, and other of markers going down. And she did not seem to have this effect when she was on the conventional medication. Only when we added these herbs that we were talking about today did she show this effect. So I'm attributing it to the botanicals, and we'll see how it goes. But yes, you can use them simultaneously.
But perhaps people should do that under the auspices of the physician.
The only problem is, and we have to say that legally, but a lot of times the doctors don't want them to be taking anything else. So that's a conundrum that we face, uneducated doctors that don't know about botanicals and would rather you to do the conventional medication. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, on a radio show, we're not actually seeing you as a patient, listeners out there. And so you need to be cautious with these things. One last herb we should just talk about before we wrap up is the Chinese skull cap. This is one of my favorite ones that people don't know a lot about, but this has shown great promise in cancer, even viruses, bacterial things, and balancing the immune response. Some of the active ingredients found in this Scutellaria bicolensis include these anti-inflammatory flavonoids. And this thing really seems to be well studied in balancing the inflammatory system. There's been studies that show it helps with gout, and there's been studies to show that it even helps with moderate osteoarthritis. In a human trial, double-blind study, 103 subjects got either the combination of the Chinese skullcap and catechin, which is a flavonoid found in green tea, or naprosyn, and they took it twice a day for a month. And they found it was as effective as the naprosyn in controlling the pain and inflammation, but had no side effects on the stomach, on the kidneys, on the liver, which is very common when people are taking these very powerful medications. So that's exciting to see that type of effect with an herb.
It is, and of course we see that all the time. And what's going on, as I said again politically, is that this information is being basically removed, both from the internet and from label copy and from anywhere that people might be able to find out the excellent studies that have been going on. The studies themselves have to be removed from literature, Dr. Z.
So how can they tell the researchers that they can't do this research and put it on PubMed or publish it in a major journal?
Right. It can get published, but then if someone is trying to sell the herb to the public, they cannot even share a link or any information or a mention of the study.
So basically, it's up to the consumer to be educated enough to put it in a search engine and do this, make these connections themselves.
Well, or see a naturopathic physician,
right,
like yourself, because I feel like that is one of the most marvelous intervention someone could do for themselves, is to find a knowledgeable, natural, holistic, educated physician.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of things. If you watch some of these, you know, big health programs on TV or whatnot, it seems like every day there's a new herb you should take. So patients come in and they're confused. So on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, the FDA trying to take everything away, there are some people that are saying that you need everything. So there has to be a balance there, and I think seeing a practitioner is a way to get individualized testing to see if you need these things.
Yes, that's a great idea. And plus, look at the amount of knowledge. And we will post this paper. We can post it on our eHear It.
Oh, great.
We have room for papers there, and then we can create a link that you can put on Dr. Z.
So what's that website? That's eHear It?
Yes, E-H-E-A-R, eHear It, I-T, E-H-E-A-R-I-T. But what we'll do is create it there, and then we have a link that you can put right on drznaturally.com, and I'll have it on naturalnurse.com so people can have this paper for themselves. And perhaps PRN would like to put it up there as well. I will email it to them.
Very good.
Because that would be a good idea.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you and being on together.
Yes, so much fun, Dr. Z, and we will continue. I guess I'm seeing you a couple days, so that'll be good as well. And until next time, listeners, we love bringing you The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find out more at drznaturally.com and also at naturalnurse.com. And we are now taking registration for our fall Echo Tours for Cures to Chinatown, and also start thinking about joining us in Jamaica for our Echo Tours for Cures with shamanic bush doctors, basically in a beautiful remote area of Jamaica, and that's coming up next March. But it's not too far to think about it, because you know, you have to put it in your schedule to make things like that happen. It's not usually something you do at a moment's notice.
So until such time, everyone, stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
We'll
be well.
See you soon. Bye-bye.